Hi, welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Freich. Thanks for joining us again today. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, and fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great women and subject matter experts and have them share their insights and expertise to help businesses all around the world become gooder. I am so very excited to introduce my guest today, Miyoko Shinner. Did I get that right?
You certainly did.
Okay, good. Thank you. And CEO of Miyoko's Creamery, the leading organic plant dairy creamery that's reinventing the dairy industry. As an Epicurean activist and leading voice on the future of food, Shinner is known as the Tesla of natural foods industry. I am super jealous of that. Can I just say, I don't know if you gave that title to yourself.
I did not. Somebody else did, actually. I don't know who wrote that intro either. I think somebody from Mirror sent it. But yes, yeah, somebody actually did call me that one time.
Oh my gosh. So okay.
I'm also known as the queen of vegan cheese. So there's a lot of monikers that
yes.
I can claim.
Do you have a favorite?
How about just Miyoko?
How about a Miyoko? Okay. You are awesome. Yes. Okay. Well, and because of that year, you're guided by your principles of compassion and justice for all living beings. You really built this into this business around your fundamental truths and principles around food and animals and the planet. And part of that, you're a founding board member for the Plant-Based Foods Association. So you wear a lot of hats, and I didn't even list all of them, but welcome, welcome, welcome. How's California today?
California actually started out pretty cold and kind of drizzly, but it's looking pretty good out there right now. I've got blue skies behind me. So
excellent.
Bad.
Whereabouts are you?
I'm in NorCal. I'm in Sonoma County. So we're in Petaluma. So this is sort of an old agricultural area. Mm-hmm. It's pretty funny. You know, people think of Sonoma as the land of wine and cheese. And there's a lot of cheese here, but because there's a lot of cheese, there's a lot of cows. And in the summertime, you get this thing called Sonoma aroma.
Oh.
The wind picks up a little bit and all mm-hmm. of a sudden you smell mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm. I used to live near a cattle ranch, a big one, big processor when I was in college. And I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So not exactly, you know, wine sipping country all the time.
Well, so when I say that you wear a lot of hats, one of the things, you know, we spent a few minutes briefly before we're recording today kind of talking about what you're passionate about. And one of the hats, I don't know if this is part of your business or just inherently who you are, is this passion for growing and mentoring women entrepreneurs. And that's really what we're here to talk about today.
Good. And I love that, you know, and it's so, so important because having been a female entrepreneur for 35 years in different roles, different businesses,
yeah.
you know, experience all sorts of things. And it's not, you know, I think women just, if they're anything like me, I think sometimes the biggest obstacle to success can be ourselves because we have these beliefs mm-hmm. that men don't have about ourselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're not really beliefs that propel us and take us into higher and higher realms.
Yeah.
Sort of beliefs about ourselves that keep us down.
Yeah.
It's not just the external challenges, but we have our own internal challenges. So I love to you know, try to inspire women and just let them know they can do it. And mm-hmm. They can do it at any age.
I love that. And part of our audience, actually a good portion of our audience, aren't necessarily entrepreneurs. They are women at all levels of their career. And I think it's really fantastic that we're going to be talking about mentorship specifically, because sometimes you're mentoring people when they're in the throes of being an entrepreneur. And sometimes by just talking about it, you become kind of an indirect mentor just by simply talking about it and seeding dreams and seeding ideas mm-hmm. for when they do go in that direction. So I'm super excited to talk about this. Before we start, because my audience is pretty broad-based, I know just about everybody on the planet knows who you are, but or who Miyoko's is, but just give us a really high level. Who's Miyoko's? What are you known for? And what are you up to these days?
So sure, we're a company that's revolutionizing the dairy industry by making cheese and butter out of plants instead of cow's milk, trying to create a world that's based on compassion for all living beings, humans, animals, the entire planet. And our products are distributed nationwide and in Canada. We're in about 20,000 stores. We're also a little bit in Asia and a little bit in South Africa.
Oh, really? South Africa?
Of all places, I know.
Who would have thought? You know, outside of the U.S. are more, especially I think in Africa, parts of EMEA and Asian countries are very heavily plant-based. So that doesn't surprise me too much, but not a lot of people are talking about Africa as a continent, which is so completely diverse. So it's exciting to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's kind of go back to this idea of mentoring women. Why is mentoring women entrepreneurs a passion of yours, specifically women? What is that that makes it burns fire in you?
Well, you know, I'm actually mentoring a very talented young lady right now who has a business that she's had for about a decade. And I see in her a lot of the same issues that I personally had myself. In previous businesses that are preventing her from, I mean, she's got an amazing product. She's an amazing person. I think she's a great businesswoman as well too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would like to see her unleash her true potential and really think bigger. And I think that's the thing that I think we all put limitations on ourselves. Yeah. Women do. And that is what really excites me is, I want to move women forward.
Yeah.
And if there's anything I can do to help a woman get to that next level, I would like to do that.
Mm-hmm. Are you specifically centered on and desiring to help women in the food and beverage industry? Or you're kind of category agnostic?
Well, I mean, I think you can help more when you know an area.
Sure.
A business. And yeah. I know food. I don't know technology, for example.
Yeah.
But there are things that cross all sectors of business, obviously, you know, how women operate, how we think, how we interact with others, a lot of the unconscious bias issues that women have in just about any role. But the higher up you go, you're going to have those challenges more. Internally as well as externally. And these are all truths. And I think the world is awakening to the reality of those, but not fast enough. In fact, there was a study that I just learned about, very, very interesting in terms of unconscious bias towards female leaders in an organization. Apparently, there is something like 70% of men will be unconsciously biased, you know, against them in some ways. But over 90% of the female employees will be more biased.
Really?
Yes. So as women, because I think we judge ourselves, we judge other women at the same time.
Yeah.
So it works both ways. You know, even though we're externally always talking about the need to prop up other women, and we're always doing this thing like, you know, the rally cry for other women. When you're in a real life situation in a company or something like that, an organization, we fall into our old habits
of
judging ourselves and judging other women much more harshly than we judge men.
That's so interesting. And because since we had that conversation, I've been trying to pay attention to my own bias as I go in there. I know for myself, it's funny to talk about women leadership and then think of them as an other, because I certainly carry my own set of leadership within our own, in our own area of expertise. So it's very strange to talk about women kind of as a different entity and that I'm not part of.
Right.
I wonder, like, let's start at the very beginning here. When we're thinking about women leaders, this is going to feel like such a weird question for me to ask, but I'm going to do it anyway. Do you feel that women leaders behave differently than men? And is it because they're women, or is it because, and if they do, if they are different, do they behave that way because of the circumstances or because they're inherently the way they are? And I know this big broad brush strokes, right?
Yeah.
It just, you know, for the sake of conversation, right. As for you the sake see of it.
Yeah. And I'm not a sociologist and I haven't right. studied this, but I think it's a little bit of both. And I think women leaders often, because we're women and, you know, we're used to thinking about others. And I'm not just, and this isn't to say that men don't think about it, but I think because biologically, because of childbirth, raising kids, et cetera, yeah. women naturally think about, you know, like, oh, are they hungry? Do they need food? Do they uh-huh. need, what are their needs? So we're mm-hmm. always thinking about that to some degree. Mm-hmm. So that is a good part of us. But at the same time, you know, we have that judgmental part of ourselves, like,
yes. you
know, not good enough, blah, blah, blah. So all of that's going to impact how you behave as a leader. And then mm-hmm. we also know that sometimes as a woman, you have to speak louder. You have to be bolder. You know, we have this pressure. You've heard this before.
Oh, yes.
You know, and a woman can be very, very direct and say, I'd like these things, these needs met. And you're classified as a royal, you know what?
Yeah.
And says those things and he's considered a good leader. I mean, these are just things you hear about.
Sure.
But I actually think it's true. I've seen it now, you know.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen it earlier in my life when I had, let's say, my last business, gosh, I had another natural food company like 20 years ago. Uh-huh. I only had women working for me. It was a small team, but we were all women.
Yes.
And I think that made a huge difference.
Really?
Yeah, I really do. Yeah.
And when you say it made a huge difference, in what way? What does that mean?
Gosh, it was really, really collaborative.
Okay.
It was a very small team, but I didn't have to say, I didn't have to direct people
yeah.
so much.
Yeah.
It
yep,
was
yep.
really just sort of like, hey, what do we want to do about this?
Yes.
Oh, I can do this. It was a lot. There was a lot of collaboration and teamwork.
Yes.
And okay. I don't remember ever having to, challenge people or yeah. say, you know, okay, I need you to do this or that yeah. or the other thing. It was just sort of like, here's the problem. And it was very, very different. And today I feel like, well, obviously it's a much bigger company.
Yeah.
But I think the combination of men and women together in, on a team, in a meeting and in a boardroom,
yes.
I think it changes things.
Yes.
In a way that I hadn't thought of before. And mm-hmm. and when you do become a leader at some point, sometimes you have to set down the wall. You have to set the rules.
Right.
There's a time and place for that. You know, there's a time to delegate. And there's a time to say, this is critical and I need mm-hmm. these things done. And you're looked at differently when you take that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of it is that women want to be liked. Like we want to be.
That's the truth.
Don't you agree? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And, you know, part of it, and of course you've been through the type of work that we do when we're doing, when our team at Retail Voodoo are doing brand development, there's actually, we bring in quite a bit of anthropological science into what we're doing because at its crux, people behave in certain ways. And yes, there are scenarios that impact people's decisions and behaviors, but it's really one of the main reasons why I started Gooder was I saw that, you know, women build businesses because they see a need in their family, their community, and so they create a product. And men typically see a business as a opportunity to make a lot of money, right? Neither is wrong. It's when we work together that companies get really, really strong because we need both. Otherwise, if we lean too much this way,
right.
This happens with the brand, we lean that way. And so it's just interesting to hear you talk about it because it's a little bit of validation to what I've been seeing is how this works. And so subsequently, because women are more nurturers and collaborators, because from an anthropological standpoint, that's what we've needed for survival, so to speak. Men have typically been hunter-gatherers. I know I'm way oversimplifying, but when you look mm-hmm. at them translated into business environment, you can see how men might have a bias this way and women might have a bias this way against each other and within themselves. It's just, so you're right, hardwired.
Yes, yeah. And I think, you know, women are somewhat learning how to behave in an organization like that as leaders. So men yes. have always been, you know, for hundreds of years, they just know in a corporate environment, obviously,
right.
But more recently, they've known what corporate behavior is supposed to be, how they're supposed to behave in order to climb the ranks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Women are just sort of figuring it out. So everywhere along the way, whether you're a manager or a director or a VP or a CEO, we're still sort of in the nascency of figuring out our corporate behavior.
Yes.
You know, which really makes it challenging, I think.
Yeah. Well, so when you're thinking back to some of these women that you've worked with, do you see those kind of common, I'm going to use the word outages, it's really just kind of blind spots or roadblocks or common bad choices simply because the way, you know, these women, we women are going through our process, there's kind of some like, oh yeah, let's, you know, we want to believe something. And so we go down that path. Do you see a commonality at all in your conversations or just even your, as you're looking in the market?
You know, just looking in the market and just talking to women of women entrepreneurs, I guess. I've seen something common, and I think it is they don't allow themselves to dream as big as men do from the get-go.
Oh,
so there are these, for example, all these startups right now in the plant-based space, for example.
Yes.
And I know male startups, you know, they started maybe around the same time as some of these female startups. And from the very, very beginning, they came out with this bold idea that they were going to be the next, you know, whatever, Beyond Meat or whatever. And they just set their goals high. And the women are much more practical to some degree. I mean, like, you know, they're looking at like, okay, what can I achieve this year? Can I get into a dozen stores or 100 stores or something like that? And they're not, the men don't care how they're going to get there. It's not like they have a roadmap painted to becoming the next Beyond Meat. It's just that they're just going to make that claim.
Right.
And making that claim lands them on the pages of, you know, the front page of Food Navigator or whatever, whether they actually even have the technology developed. But the women are just like, okay, I can only make this many right now. So I'm only going to set my goals this high.
Yes.
And they just don't allow themselves to think big. And because of that, the world doesn't listen.
Yeah.
The world almost from the very beginning just sort of dismisses them as, oh, that's nice. You know, they got this cute little company and they're doing this. But there's nothing that makes them less qualified, less brilliant, less capable. Except we all have this baggage of feeling like, you know, we still think it's a man's world. I mean, that's the truth. That's our unconscious bias. We're all still thinking, you know, that it's the men who are going to get the accolades. And it's very rare you meet a woman with just this bravado from the get-go. I mean, they do exist. They do exist. And you see them, and some of them, when they have their downfall, like the, who was that woman in, you know, the Thera, whatever, she was the biotech, you know, the medicine, the pharmaceutical.
Oh, you know. I don't remember the name.
Was like Thera. Anyway, you know, when they have their downfall, it's huge.
Yeah.
So yes. It's hard for them to get up there and
to recover.
To recover. I mean, I think we tiptoe. A lot more.
I see that. And let me show you, just as you're talking, I'm thinking about this, even within the context of this podcast, right? I can tell you many, many companies owned by men and men in leadership positions have approached me to be on the podcast, on this podcast, on the Gooder podcast, the podcast that's about women. And
because they don't care. Well, that's an interesting thing, isn't it?
And subsequently, can I tell you how many women I've reached out to that have said, I just don't know if I should do a podcast. I like the trepidation and the fear of putting themselves. So I'm, you know, I'm just doing that translation. And the men will even say, well, I know it's for women, but could we spin it in a particular way? And I'll be like, no. the whole point. And it doesn't offend me in any way. I'm like, rock on. That's what you should do. But it's very interesting. The duality that you've identified, I'm seeing it there as well.
Well, you know about that study, right? About resumes. Apparently they did the study You know, they gave job descriptions to both men and women, and it turned out that even if the men didn't qualify for, you know, even half of the of what was on the JD, they'd apply anyway.
Really?
And a woman would not apply if she didn't, she couldn't check
every single box,
every single thing.
Really?
Yes. And so, I mean, that's how that basically that men want to be on a woman's podcast. I mean, men don't care. They want to define the moment. They don't want you to define the moment. And women are like, well, what are the rules? What are the parameters?
Yes.
Where do, what lane do I need to be in?
Yeah.
And this is where we have to break free of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not any woman's fault, because this is how we have been raised and trained for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So here we are today. And, you know, women's, I grew up in the, you know, the women's liberation movement back in the 60s and 70s.
Uh-huh.
And we still got a long ways to go.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still not there. This is a different world, but the fact is that unconscious part is what's driving us, driving our behavior, driving our successes or lack thereof, both coming from us as well as the world. So we got a ways to go before, you know, we're in that sort of free world where we think we can, the men think they can break the rules. We don't.
Yeah. And I think you're right. We need to start leaning in that direction, because let's use that as a platform. Like, there's no shame in that men, that's how men behave. Like, I want to be clear on that. That's awesome. Let's us now start following in their footsteps as well. But I think as women, we need to support each other. And believe me, there are so many male advocates that are out there too. We just need to look for them and ask for that guidance.
But absolutely, there are.
I want to steer this very, very specifically, because this is also a sub part of my topic here. And I'm wanting to raise the visibility and diversity of leadership, of diversity in leadership, specifically in the naturals category, because it is very, very Caucasian led leadership. So when we're talking about mentoring people and you're looking at women from all backgrounds, biopic, LGBTQ, disabled, et cetera. Do you see, or have you seen, and the answer might be no, but have you seen maybe different groups of women struggle with different leadership issues? Is it like a group thing, or is it just all women behave one way? Or I don't know how to slice it and dice it. I just want to leave that out there.
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, to be honest, I'm thinking about the women, you know, startups that I know that I've mentored or spoken to, you know, maybe gave advice one time or whatever, anyone and everyone. And I would say that, most of them are white women. There've been a couple of Asians, and there've been a couple of Black women. You know, once again, it's just, they're all really, really small companies. And I would say they all have that same sort of fear of dreaming too big.
Okay.
I really, really feel like that's their biggest, that's what's holding them back. But it's not just dreaming too big. It's, I do know one gal who's not afraid to dream big.
Okay.
But most of them are, and they're afraid to tell people, which is exactly how I was too. Like, I was, I didn't have that bravado. I couldn't tell people how big I wanted to dream.
Yeah.
I had the same problem.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's the first thing, like, they got to get over that first, you know. I'm not sure I answered your question.
That's okay. I mean, to me, what it sounds like is you haven't noticed a difference between people with different backgrounds, that the common, the biggest and most common obstacle is, women as a whole are find it hard to dream big. I mean, or maybe it's not that they're afraid to dream big. I think they're afraid to vocalize it. I think the dream is in there.
The dream is in there. They're afraid to vocalize it because they're afraid of being dismissed or laughed at, or, you know, I mean, because that happened to me. I mean, years ago, somebody said, so you sold your company, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, you know, I really would like to do a vegan cooking show on TV. And this man laughed out loud, and he said, well, that's not going to happen. So what are you going to do next?
Oh, really?
I just stopped telling people what I, And yeah, I did do three seasons on a PBS, on a show that aired on PBS. But anyway,
so that's huge.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, so as you're thinking about this, like maybe we can step back and kind of go, okay, listening audience, everybody, whether it's men or women, how can we in our industry start creating a culture where women can be expressive and can reach the goals and the potential of their dreams? Like, what is it that we can be doing with our thought process and in our behaviors?
I think it would really help if we could get the media involved.
Okay.
I've noticed this time and time again. Male startups mm-hmm. get a lot more kudos and media time than women startups.
Okay.
And, you know, there are plenty of female entrepreneurs in the plant-based space that are just not getting the spotlight at all.
Okay.
And some guy will have an idea. He, you know, may not even be in distribution, may just be at the conceptual stage and,
yeah.
and getting, you know, articles and ink and Food Navigator and things. And I noticed that at an event that I went to that was trying to pair companies up with the media. It was sort of an interesting dinner. This is a few years ago.
Yes.
And I noticed that there were more kind of women waiting around to talk to journalists than the men were. And I don't know. I mean, this could have just been chance or whatever.
Sure.
But there just seems to be this, you know, and maybe it's the way we carry ourselves.
Yeah.
It's the lack of confidence we have when we talk to a journalist.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask the media to try to go out of their way to spotlight female entrepreneurs, because that will give them more confidence. And the next time they're interviewed, the next time they have the opportunity to express what their big dreams are, they'll be able to do so. But we need a helping hand. We really, really do.
Yeah. It also goes back to that flip side, like what I was telling you more about earlier about the podcast, where I see women resistant to put forward. I can list a half dozen women that I talk to that are like, I don't know that my story is important or relative or my POV is like, what do we need to be telling those women? Because of course there's people like you and I that are putting ourselves out there, and there are more and more of us, but how do we help these other women? Or is it just by being here and being who we are? And that's how we kind of help them along.
Yeah, I mean, definitely being here and being who I would call them again, you know, the people that turned you down, mm-hmm. I call them again. And, you know, I think they have to get used to the idea that they actually do have something to contribute. And here's, I mean, that's an interesting thing you just said. I think men grow up with this idea of an inherent value in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They grow up thinking that whatever they do is valuable.
Yes.
And women, you know, I think we have spent so much of our lives trying to please our fathers, please our mothers, please our children, please our husbands. We're always looking for self-validation
through
others telling us that they're grateful for what we've done for them.
Yeah, we have to prove our worth.
We have to prove our worth, yes. And so these women, you know, like my very first business, I remember someone coming up to me, you know, 30 years ago and saying, oh my God, thank you for starting this bakery. You've really, you know, you changed my life. I was such a sugar addict. Now I can have vegan desserts. Thank you so much. And I'm like, what are you talking about? All I'm doing is making cake. You know? Like, this isn't rocket, you know, it's not like I've cured cancer or anything.
Yeah.
And so we still have this, we really don't feel that we're of much value.
Yeah.
And so we have to start shining the spotlight on them and making them feel valued. That is really what's going to help their growth.
Mm-hmm.
They just need more help than men do. I mean, they've been kept out, you know, women have been suppressed. We all know that.
Yeah.
We need to help. We need to go overboard to help women like that to regain confidence,
mm-hmm.
regain confidence. And believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I know we talked about this from this might be redundant, but you know, I think you've already answered this. My question is, what do you wish all women leaders could embrace on their journey? And I know that we talked about dreaming big. That might just be it. Like, that might just be your platform, is about dreaming big and owning the dream.
Well, I think support from those that they work with as well.
Okay.
And learning how to be a leader even when you don't get the support.
Yes.
Learning to speak up and keep asking for what you want, and stating your beliefs, even though those that you hire may not support you.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time, you know, because you bring in the big guns, you bring in the experts. Sure. And maybe they have more credentials than you do.
Yeah.
But you may have the better idea.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to be swayed by them. And next thing you know, it's not your company anymore. It's somebody else's company.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't have to be a company. It could be, in the natural space, that's where my head goes. But maybe, I don't know, you're a playwright and the director says you need to change this, this, and this. You know what I mean? At some point, despite the pushback, and you're going to get pushback.
Yeah.
You're going to get people that disagree with you, that make you feel like you don't know what you're doing, that you're a bad leader, whatever. And you have to find your voice. Yeah. You have to grow your voice. You have to maintain your voice.
Yeah. I keep hearing in the back of my head, there's a rejection component in here, and that women maybe put too much weight on rejection instead of it being an event. There's some deep meaning behind it, this fraud, this, I don't know what that might be. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I think women are very sensitive to rejection. Mm-hmm. We kind of take it personally. I'm not saying every woman, but a lot of women, we take it personally. We don't think of it as I don't know. For example, in research and development, or as a chef, you know, trying to develop a recipe or something like that. You know, you make stuff and people sometimes don't like it.
Yeah.
And the goal has to be, how do I get it to a point where it works?
Right.
And
how can you commercialize it? Yeah.
Oftentimes we personalize, oh my God, they didn't like my recipe. They didn't like my form.
Yeah.
And so I don't find that in research and development. Everyone's a pro.
Right.
And that's different. But I feel that oftentimes, I've seen women just get crushed.
Yeah.
When that first rejection comes about their idea, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think we're just a little bit too more sensitive than a lot of men.
Yeah.
So we need to become more resilient.
Yeah. It's that attachment to wanting to be liked. I think, I think going back to something you said earlier, when you think about it, so we're talking about, okay, let's grow women leaders and we want them to be stronger and blah, blah, blah. What does that future look like when we have more women, more stronger women coming up in the system, like, and we're growing this diversity? What's the possibility for business, or what do you see as the possibility for business in the naturals community if we can get more women to kind of shake it off, open up a little bit?
I think it's going to be more in line with what the natural category is supposed to do. I mean, the natural category is supposed to take care of people, the planet, and animals. That's the whole movement. It's about creating a sane and sustainable community for all. And what's happened is it's sort of, it started out back in the 60s and 70s as sort of this hippy-dippy, feel-good love, that was the origin.
Yeah.
And today it's become very, very corporate.
Yes.
And it's become oftentimes very cutthroat.
Right.
And we need to reinsert the initial spirit of the natural industry.
Yes.
And by having more female leaders, we're going to start creating more companies that actually take care of people, planet, and animals.
Yes.
We're going to create more nurturing companies.
Yes. Yeah. Those are kind of all of the big core questions around this topic that I wanted to ask, but is there anything that you really, you know, that we didn't really cover today that you're like, I really wanted to get this out. This is really important for me to share.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I already said this or not, but as a female leader, if you are an entrepreneur and, you know, your company is going to grow and you're going to get bigger and bigger and you're going to go higher up in the ranks and you're going to be the CEO, or maybe you're a manager and you're hoping to climb through the ranks.
Yes.
Just be prepared for challenges. It's just a harder road. And if things don't go the way you plan, it may not be because of you. It may not be because you're a terrible leader.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Because of so many other things. Recognize that. There is a large piece of sociology and psychology that plays into this. So read up on it, learn about it.
Yes.
Continue to work on yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't get to go to the opposite end where you're blaming everybody externally.
Right.
Because we're a part of that problem.
Each
one of us is part of that. You know, we have our own unconscious biases, and we're also creating our own obstacles. So be aware of all that. Get coaching help. Find a great female coach if you can. Network. Talk to other women entrepreneurs or role models.
Yes.
Share stories. Be open. Yeah. And be ready always to support other women.
Yeah. And I'll say I have a coach that I work with who happens to be male, and he's quite a bit older than I am and really a great advocate. And what I love about him, I think you can have a male coach too,
I agree.
But he will oftentimes say something and goes, well, that was a really bonehead. Like he's even going through his own, like, well, of course the blah, 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 blah. And so there's this kind of discovery of seeing the universe through his eyes as we're going through this as well.
Right.
So I would say I totally agree with coaching. Really makes you a better person, kind of gets you outside of your head without going through that full like therapy. It's kind of like therapy light in some ways.
It is. Yes. Yeah. But it's tied to business.
Yes.
So, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
And tactical behavior.
Yes.
So you know how to respond in certain situations.
Yes. Yeah. Very practical, tactical.
Very practical, tactical. Yeah.
I wonder, you know, we've had an opportunity to talk about your point of view. Like, who are you looking out there at in the marketplace, whether it's in our naturals category or outside of category? Who is it that you admire or respect from a woman leadership standpoint, or just simply want to elevate? And why? Why are they? Why do they have a special place in your world?
In our category?
It could be in our category. It could be outside of category. You know, there, I have my favorites of people that I constantly look to. I wonder who you might be.
Yeah. You know, one that comes to mind is Arianna Huffington, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the funny things about her that I like is that she even talks about the need for sleep.
Smart women.
It's a very, very smart thing. Let's see. In our category, I'm trying to think in the natural category. You're going to have to record my pauses. I know there is someone, and I am just kind of blanking right now.
That's okay.
Let me think. So I really do want to contribute a name.
Yeah. If you know what the brand is, I could probably help you out.
Yeah. Well, one of them is I can't remember her name, the founder of Sweet Earth. She was a woman.
Oh, yes. Her name escapes me, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've really, I think, you know, they've really, even though they were gobbled up by Nestle, they've really stuck to their core beliefs, and their products still reflect the values that they launched with, rather than, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I've never met her or anything, but attest to her, you know, her dedication to her mission and the direction she wants to go.
Yeah,
I can't remember her name. I'm blanking.
It'll come to you about 5 minutes after we finish recording, I'm sure. Yeah. we'll link to her and her brand in the podcast. Those are kind of the biggie questions. I always love it. You know, before I leave there, I always have these kind of little anecdotal questions, before we finish recording, things about either your industry or your business or your brand, your product, like some sort of what I like to call a cocktail hour tidbit that, you know, when I'm talking with my friends, I'll go, did you know that, you know, I don't know, that there are 470 shades of red lipstick, you know, some sort of interesting fact about you or your brand.
Some interesting tidbit. Let's see. That's a hard one. I mean, you threw me for a loop there. I mean, well, I assume you know about Rancho Compasión.
Well, why don't you talk about that for a moment? Because I didn't mention it earlier.
Okay. Well, Rancho Compasión is a farmed animal sanctuary, a 501c3 nonprofit that I started. And it's not necessarily related directly to Miyoko's, but we do, you know, Miyoko's employees do volunteer there occasionally.
Okay.
But we rescue farm animals, and we have an educational outreach program and school field trips prior to COVID. We had virtual school field trips this year.
Really?
But we try to connect people to the lives, the inner lives of animals that have been taken out of the food industry, out of animal agriculture, and let people get a sneak peek into their antics and quirks and their fun-loving selves, and makes them think differently about animals as food. This company really is dedicated to liberty, justice, and happiness for all living beings. So, you know, we take that seriously. And actually at the company, we talk about these topics all the time. We watch movies and have discussions about so many social justice issues.
Yeah.
So we really take it to heart here.
Yeah. Well, that's in line with your B Corp status. Now we're a B Corp as well. So have to live and breathe it to be a B Corp. So that is definitely even that effort there is a testament to your commitment to the planet, people, purpose, and planet. What other brands or trends are you finding interesting? Are you keeping your eye on right now?
Oh God. I mean, just everything that's happening in plant-based. I mean, especially in the cheese category, because 5-6 years ago when I started, you couldn't buy vegan cheese online. It didn't exist.
Right.
And you didn't have entire, doors at stores filled with vegan cheese.
Right.
This has happened. I mean, the exponential growth over the last 6 years has been absolutely amazing.
Yes.
And there are so many little tiny cheesemakers coming out of the woodwork all over the country. So of course I'm looking to see what new brands are out all the time. Mm-hmm. I order things online from small cheesemakers to support them and try them out. And I don't know, I just find it really exciting. I'm always checking out every new vegan product. Like I'm literally on sites like Vegan Essentials and just all the time looking to see what's new, So I feel like it's my job to buy every new product that's out there.
Oh, I bet your fridge is amazing.
Oh my God, there's way too much stuff in it. Yeah.
Well, and I think also with the acceleration of people's diets and health related, meaning not only do we have people that have allergies, but intolerances have continued to grow. So, I mean, people are vegan for a couple of reasons now, where vegan used to be really predominantly people that were animal rights focused. Now we're looking at health and wellness issues and kind of really getting real about how food impacts individuals. And so it's interesting to see the category exploding. And meeting the needs.
Yes, absolutely. There's so many more choices for everybody, not just not just vegan. So
yeah.
And you know what? I'm just going to say this once again. There are a lot of women entrepreneurs in this space.
And, yes.
You know, I'd love to give them a leg up.
Yeah.
Really, really would.
Okay. Well, so, you know, are you looking to mentor more people? Do you want to kind of put that out there, or you have a process by which you make decisions that way?
Well, I don't have a lot of bandwidth.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm usually happy to take a call.
Okay.
With someone and just sort of answer some high level questions.
Okay.
Or coach him briefly.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if that's something you're interested in, send me an email. I can't guarantee that
sure.
I will be able to do that.
Okay.
Right now I am mentoring one person on a couple times a month, and it's been going for several months. And I really would like to help, you know, not just spread it all over, but I mean, if I can really help somebody deeper, go deeper, that's also wonderful too. But and really I'd like to encourage other women entrepreneurs that are a little further along to do the same, try to mentor someone. And also I would say that to even men, if you're a compassionate man, why not help mentor a young female on not necessarily young, but you know, a female entrepreneur who's earlier in her career than not. It would be wonderful to get some male entrepreneurs, male business folks as well.
Yeah.
To help mentor, because we really, really need that and encouragement.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is, and I don't know if you'll find this surprising or not, but during this summer and up until a couple of months ago, you know, 2020 has thrown wrenches in a lot of people's careers. I have met more women in their 40s and 50s, and I want to even say one person in their early 60s that have gone from doing something completely different that have decided this. I've been making this thing for 15 years or 20 years or my whole life, and my family's told me I should make it happen. So I've decided 2020 is going to be the year. There are women of all ages out there that are starting from scratch.
I love it.
It's pretty great.
It is so great. And I want everyone to know I started Miyoko's when I was 57.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So
there you go.
You can start at any age.
Any age. That's great. Well, before we go, why don't you tell us a little bit about, just give us one way of how you're keeping yourself sane during all of this.
It pretty much just going for a run on the trails of my dogs. That is the best time for me. Enjoying nature, the fresh air. And then that's really when I do my best thinking. Or I listen to Italian. So I just put my headphones in. I listen to Italian podcasts and
really,
and, you know, try to understand as much as I can. Sometimes it's, you know, depending on how easy the podcast is.
Yeah. What a great way to learn the language or get stronger at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Miyoko, that's the end of our time. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I hope you got to share what you're passionate about, and really look forward to meeting you in person, maybe with a glass of wine in hand. But if not, I'm sure I'll see you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See you on the airways. Thank you so much.
All right, Diana. It was good. Thank you.
Thank you. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.